Chapter 13. At the end of the meeting, a group gathered to talk and smoke cigarettes outside. They smiled at Milton as he climbed the steps from the basement. He knew that their smiles were meant as encouragement for him to stop and speak. They meant well, of course they did, but it was pointless. He couldn't possibly. He smiled back at them, but didn't stop. He had no idea what he would say. Far better to make a quick exit.
Hey, man. Hey, hold up.
Milton was at the gate, ready to turn onto the street to start the walk home. He paused and turned back. The man who had been serving the coffee, Rutherford, was jogging across in his direction. Milton took a moment to consider him again. He was big, over 6 foot tall and solid with it, several stones heavier than he was. He loped across the churchyard, moving with an easy spring that suggested plenty of strength in his legs.
"You don't hang about,"
he said as he reached him.
"There's a cafe down the road. People stop for coffee or a bite to eat, have a chat. You should come."
Milton smiled. "Not for me, but thanks."
"You didn't speak in the meeting. There's no point just sitting there, man. You've got to get stuck in."
"Listening's good enough."
"Not if you want to really make a difference. I had that problem myself back when I first started coming. Thought it was crazy, no one was going to want to listen to my shit. But I got over it in the end. Eventually, the way I saw it, coming along and not doing anything was a waste of my time. That's why I do the coffees. Start small, right, and take it from there. You've got to get involved."
Rutherford spoke slowly and deliberately, as if measuring each word. The effect was to imbue each with a persuasive weight. He was an impressive man.
"I suppose so."
"Which way are you headed, man? Back to Hackney?"
"Yes."
"Me too. Come on. You don't mind, we can walk together."
"You don't want to go to the cafe?"
"Nah, won't make no difference if I miss it tonight. I'm up at 6 tomorrow, I should probably get an early night."
Milton would have preferred to walk alone, but there was something infectious in Rutherford's bearing that stalled his objections, and, besides, it didn't look like he was going to take no for an answer. They set off together, making their way along Holloway Road towards Highbury Corner. He started speaking.
"What's your story, then?"
Milton took a breath.
"Well, the same as most people, I suppose. I was drinking too much and I needed help to stop."
"How about you?"
"Same deal, man. I was in the forces. 15 years. Saw some stuff I never want to see again. I only stopped feeling guilty about it when I was drunk."
He turned to look at him.
"Don't mind me being presumptuous, John, but you're a soldier too, right?
Is it that obvious?"
"You know what it's like. We got that look. Where did you serve? The sandpit?"
"For a while."
"Ireland?"
"Yes."
"I've been all over the place too, man. See the world, that's what they told me when they were trying to get me to sign up, like it's some glamorous holiday. It was fun for a while, but then I saw what it was really all about. By the time I got wise to it, I was a raging drunk."
"What happened?"
"Look, I ain't saying I'm not grateful for what the army did for me. When I was a younger man, 10 years ago, I got into all sorts of mess that I didn't want to be getting involved in. Trouble, man, all kinds of trouble. Got myself in with a bad crowd from around here. Ended up doing plenty of things I regret. Drink and drugs, you know what it's like. I got friends from around that time. Plenty of them got banged up and a couple of them are dead. Could have easily been me. The army was a way to get away from all that."
He spoke fluently, settling comfortably into a story that he had clearly told many times before, probably at the meetings.
"And it worked, at least for a time. took me away from here, broadened my horizons, gave me structure and discipline in my life. And those things are good things, things I needed. But they come at a price, right? The things I saw while I was out there doing my thing.
He paused.
Well, shit. It got so bad by the end that I could only live with myself with a drink inside me, you know what I mean?
He was full of heat and passion. Milton said that he understood.
I don't take this life lightly, John. The way I see it, the fellowship has given me a blessing. The gift of knowledge. I can see what's wrong with how things are. I know the things that work and the things that don't. Drink and drugs, they don't. Not many people get given a chance to make a difference, but I did. And one day at a time, I ain't gonna throw it away.
They passed into the busy confluence of traffic and pedestrians circulating around the roundabout at Highbury Corner and moved on to Dalston Lane. Youngsters gathered outside the tube, ready to filter towards the pubs and bars of Islington High Street. Touts offered cheap rides. Immigrants pushed burgers and hot dogs. Drunken lads spilled out of the pub next to the station. How? Milton asked him.
How what, ma'am?
How are you going to make a difference?
Boxing. I used to be a tasty heavyweight when I was a lad. I got to be big early, big and strong, and I had a right hand you didn't want to get hit by. If I'd stayed with it, who knows? I wouldn't have got into the trouble I did, that's for sure. I wouldn't have gotten into the army, and I reckon I was probably good enough to make a decent career out of it. I'm too old and out of shape for that now, but I've still got it all up in here.
He tapped a finger to his temple.
So I've set up a club for youngsters, see? Amateurs, girls and boys, all ages. They ain't got nothing to do around here. Nothing except run with the gangs and get into mischief. I know no better than most where that road leads. You're a younger born here. You run with one of them gangs. There are two places for you to go. Prison or the crematorium. The military is one way out, but I can't recommend that no more. So I try to give them another way. Something else to do, some structure, some discipline. And you hope that's enough. It can be the difference, and the way I see it, if I help a handful of them get away from temptation, that's good enough. That's my job done.
I used to box, Milton said, smiling for the first time, a long time ago.
Rutherford looked him up and down, tall, lean, and hard.
You got to look for it, he said. Cruiserweight?
Maybe these days. Milton smiled. Middleweight back then.
Where's the club?
Churchill on Grove Road near the park. Monday, Wednesday and Friday nights and all day Saturdays. Got about 20 regulars now.
His eyes flashed with passion.
Got some kids who are on the fringes of the gangs. Some of them have potential. This one girl, man, you wouldn't believe how hard she can hit. Like a pile driver. Knocked this lad who was giving her lip into the middle of next week. He never gave her a lip after that.
He grinned at the memory of it. They reached Milton's turning.
This is me, he said.
Rutherford cocked an eyebrow in surprise.
You're living in the estate?
Yes.
Rutherford sucked his teeth. Not good.
You're in the worst bit of acne. And acne's different. You talk about Waltham Forest, you talk about Camden, Southwark, Lambeth, all the rest. Sure, they got bad people there. Plenty of serious players. But here, man, acne's different. You understand? The boys here are more serious than anywhere else. Everyone is banging. I mean, everyone. Can't even compare what it's like here with them other places. You best be careful, you hear? Don't matter how big you are, they won't care about that. They got a knife or a shooter and they think you're worth rolling. I'm telling you, man, it don't matter how mean you look, they'll do it.
Nice to meet you, Rutherford.
You too, John. You take it easy. Maybe I'll see you at the meeting next week.
Maybe.
and say something next time, all right? You look like you got plenty on your mind. You'll be surprised the difference it makes.
Milton watched as the big man walked away from him. He turned off the main road and headed into the estate, stopping at the mini-market to buy another bag of ice. He ignored the sullen aggression of the teenagers who were gathered outside the shop, the silence as he passed through them, and then the hoots of derision, the calls of Lighty and Batty Boy as he set off again. Most of them were young, barely in their teens. Milton didn't give them a second look. It was 10:30 by the time he returned to the maisonette. He took the carton of orange juice and poured it into one of the newly cleaned glasses. He opened the bag of ice and dropped in 3 chunks, putting the rest in the freezer. He took off his clothes and put his gun and holster under a pillow. He swilled the juice around to cool. He pulled a chair up to the window, then went and sat down, letting the hot air, the compound smell of baked asphalt and fried food, breathe over his body. He sipped the cool drink, feeling the tang against the back of his throat, felt it slide cold down his throat and into his stomach. He filled up his glass again, this time with more ice, and sat back down. The bedroom overlooked the front of the house. He looked out onto the street and beyond that, the looming mass of Blissett House. A group of young boys had gathered at the junction of the road, the glowing red tips of their cigarettes and joints flaring as they inhaled. Milton felt restless. He went over and took his gun from beneath the pillow, slipped out the magazine and pumped the single round onto the bed. He tested the spring of the magazine and of the breech and drew a quick bead on various objects round the room. His aim was off, just a little, but detectable nonetheless. It was the tiny tremor in his hand. He had noticed it in France, and it seemed to be getting worse. He snapped the magazine back. He pumped a round into the breech and replaced the gun under the pillow. He watched the kids outside for another 5 minutes, the sound of their raucous laughter carrying all the way back to the open window. Then, tired, he closed the curtains, finished undressing, and went to bed. Chapter 14. Elijah watched the Vietnamese hassling the shoppers as they came out of Tesco. They were in the car park, far enough away from the entrance to go unnoticed by the security guards. They stepped up to the shoppers with their trolleys full of groceries and held out the satchels that they wore around their shoulders. There were 4 of them, 2 men and 2 women, all of them slim and dark-haired. The satchels were full of pirated DVDs. They were given the brush off most of the time, but occasionally someone would stop, rifle through the bags, and hand over a £10 note in exchange for a couple of them.
"You ready, younger?" said Pops.
"Yeah," Elijah said. "Ready."
"Off you go, then."
He did exactly as Pops had instructed him. One of the Vietnamese women was distracted by little Mark, who pretended to be interested in her DVDs. She kept her money in a small shoulder bag that she allowed to hang loosely across her arm. Elijah ran up to her, and her attention diverted, he yanked on the bag as hard as he could. Her arm straightened as he tugged the bag down, her fingers catching it. A second, harder tug broke her grip, and he was away. He sprinted back again, the other boys following after him in close formation. The 2 men started in pursuit, vaulting the wall that separated the car park from the pavement and the bus stop beyond. But it didn't take long for them to abandon the chase. They were outnumbered and being led into unfriendly territory. They knew that the money wasn't worth the risk. The boys ran down Morning Lane, whooping and hollering, eventually taking a sharp left along the cycle path that ran underneath the East London line. They sprinted up the shallow incline on the other side of the tunnel and slowed to a jog. Once they were in the estate, they found a low wall and sat down along it. Pops held up his fist and Elijah bumped it with his. He beamed with pride. He knew he ought to keep his cool, hide away the excitement and happiness that he felt, but he couldn't help it. He didn't care how foolish it made him look.
"How much you get?"
Elijah took the notes from his pocket and fanned through them.
200,
he reported.
Not bad.
Pops reached across and took the notes. He counted out 50 and gave it back to Elijah.
Go on, younger. Put that towards some new Jordans. You done good.
Little Mark went into the minimart nearby and returned with a large bottle of cider and a bag full of chocolate. The cider was passed around, each boy taking a long swig of it. Elijah joined in when the plastic bottle reached him, the sickly sweet liquid tasting good as he tipped it down his throat.
What did you get? Kids asked.
Little Mark opened the bag and emptied out the contents. He laid the bars out on the wall.
Twix, Kit Kat, Mars, Yorkie.
Too pikey.
Maltesers, Milky Way.
Too gay.
Got 'em for you, innit? Galaxy Caramel, that's it. You want something else, go get it yourself.
Pops tossed the chocolate around and they devoured it.
I got a jet,
Pops said eventually, folding the wad of notes and sliding them into his pocket.
My woman wants to see me. I'll see you boys tomorrow, all right?
Hold up, Little Mark said. I'm going your way.
Me too, Kid said.
Elijah was left with Pinky. He wanted to go with the others, but Pinky got up and stretched.
Come on, he said. I'll walk back with you.
They set off together, making their way through the estate and cutting across a scrubby patch of grass. Pinky was a little older and a little taller than Elijah. His face was sharply featured, with a hook nose and prominent cheekbones. He was normally boisterous and brash, full of spiteful remarks, yet now he was quiet and brooding. Elijah quickly felt uncomfortable and wondered if there was a way he could disentangle himself without causing offence. They made their way through the estate to a children's playground. The surface was soft and springy beneath their trainers, but the equipment had all been vandalised. The swings had been looped over the frame so that they hung high up, uselessly, and the roundabout had been pulled from its fixings. Vials of crack were crushed underfoot, shards that glittered like diamonds amid the dog mess, discarded newspaper and fast food wrappers.
Sit down here for a minute,
Pinky said, pointing to a bench at the edge of the playground.
Something I want to talk to you about.
Elijah's nerves settled like a fist in his stomach.
I got to get back to my mum's.
You don't want a quick smoke?
Pinky reached into his jacket and grinned as he opened his hand. He had a small bag of weed and a packet of Rizzlers.
Sit yourself down. I want to get high. Won't take long.
Elijah did as he was told and sat. Pinky was quiet as he held the cigarette paper open on his lap and tipped a line of marijuana along the fold. He rolled the joint with dexterous fingers, sealed it, and put it to his lips. He put the flame to the end and sucked down greedily. He did not give the joint to Elijah.
You're quieting down now, little man, he said.
Yeah,
Elijah said uncertainly.
You don't want to get too excited.
What do you mean?
That big smile you had on your face back then, like you won the fucking lottery. Robbing those nips ain't nothing. Rolling that train weren't either. You ain't done shit yet.
Elijah was ready to fire back some lip, but he saw the look in the boy's face and decided against it. He knew banter, and this was something different. Hostility sparked in his dark eyes, and he could see it would take very little for the sparks to catch and grow into something worse.
You don't know me, do you?
What do you mean?
You don't know who I am.
Of course I do.
So?
You're Pinky?
He said with sudden uncertainty.
That's right. But you don't know me, do you? Not really know me.
I guess not.
You know my brother, Dwayne? You heard of him?
No?
The joint had gone out. Pinky lit it again.
Let me tell you a story. 5 years ago, my brother was in the LFB like me. They called him High Top. Your brother, Jules, he was in too. The two of them was close,
close as you can be, looked out for each other. Same way that we look out for each other, innit? He put the joint to his lips and drew down on it hard. There's this one time, right? There was a beef between this crew from Tottenham and the LFB. So they went over there, caused trouble, battered a couple of their boys. Tottenham came over these ends to retaliate, and they found your brother and my brother smoking in a park, like we are right now. They got the jump on them. They was all tooled up, and our brothers didn't have nothing. Rather than stay and get stuck in, your fussy brother breezed straight out of the park, didn't look back, forgot all about my brother. And he wasn't so lucky. The Tottenham boys had knives and cleavers, and they wanted to make an example out of him. They cut my brother up, bruv. Sliced him. His face, across his back, his legs, all over. Ended up stabbing him in the gut. He was in hospital for 2 weeks while they stitched him together again. His guts, they was all fucked up. He weren't never the same again. He has to shit into a bag now, and it ain't never going to get better. Turned him into a shadow of himself.
Fuck that,
Elijah managed to say. My brother would never have done that. Yeah, really? Your brother? What's he doing now? We don't see him no more. Don't go on like you don't know. I seen him. He's a fucking addict. He was a coward then, and now he's a fucking junkie. Elijah got up from the bench. Give me that money, Pinky said. Elijah shook his head. No, Pops gave it to me. I earned it. It's mine. You want to fall out with me, little man? No. Pinky grabbed him by the lapels of his coat and shoved him to the ground. He fell atop him, pressing his right arm across his throat, pinning him down, and reached inside of his jacket with his left hand. He found the notes and pocketed them. Remember your place, he said. You ain't nothing to me. You think you're a gangster, but you ain't shit. Give me lip like that again and I'll shank you. He took out a butterfly knife, shook it open, and held the blade against Elijah's cheek. One jerk of my hand now, bruv, and you mark for life. Know what it'll say? No, Elijah said, his voice shaking. Pinky's bitch. Elijah lay still as Pinky drew the cold blade slowly down his face. Pinky took a bunched handful of his jacket and pulled his head up and then, with a pivot, slammed him down again. The surface was soft, but even so, the sudden impact was dizzying. Pinky got up and backed away. He pointed at Elijah's head and laughed. Elijah felt a dampness against the back of his crown and in the nape of his neck. He reached around gingerly, expecting to find his own blood. He did not. Pinky had pushed him back into dog mess. The shit was in his hair and against his skin, sliding down beneath the collar of his jacket.
Later, little man!
Pinky laughed at him. He left Elijah on the ground. He bit his lip until the older boy was out of sight, and then, alone, he allowed himself to cry. Chapter 15. Milton waited until the sun had sunk below the adjacent houses before he went out to scout the area. It was a humid, close evening. The stifling heat of the day had soaked into the estate, and now it was slowly seeping out. Televisions flickered in the front rooms of the houses on his street, most of the neighbours leaving their windows uncovered. Arguments played out of open doors. The atmosphere sparked with the dull electric throb of tension, of barely suppressed aggression and incipient violence. The area seemed to come alive at night. There were people everywhere. Youngsters gathered on street corners and on weed-strewn playgrounds. Others listlessly tossed basketballs across a pockmarked court while they were watched by girls who laced their painted nails through the wire mesh fence. A lithe youngster faked out his doughty guard and made a stylish layup, the move drawing whoops from the spectators. Music played from the open windows of cars and houses. Graffiti was everywhere. One crude mural showing groups of children with guns killing one another.
Milton carried on further along the road. A railway bridge that bore the track into Liverpool Street cast the arcade of shops below into a pool of murky gloom. A man smoking Turkish cigarettes levered rolls of carpet back into his shop. Drivers gathered around a minicab office. The sound of clashing metal from the open windows of a gym with a crude stencil of Charles Atlas on the glass. The arcade carried the sickly smell of kebab meat, fried chicken and dope. Milton took it all in, remembering the layout of the streets and the alleyways that linked them. Two streets to the east, and he was in an area that bore the unmistakable marks of gentrification. A gourmet restaurant, a shishi coffee shop that would be full of prams in the daytime, a happening pub full of hipsters in drainpipe jeans and 50s frocks, an elegant Victorian terrace in perfect repair, beautifully tended front gardens behind painted iron fences. Two streets west, and he was back in the guts of the estate, the 10-storey slabs of housing blocks with the nauseatingly bright orange balconies festooned with satellite dishes. Milton crossed into Victoria Park, a wide open space fringed by fume-choked fir trees. A series of paved paths cut through the park, intermittent and unreliable street lamps providing discreet pools of light that made the darkness in between even deeper and more threatening. The area's reputation kept it quiet at night, save for drunken city boys who used it as a shortcut, easy pickings for the gangs that roamed across it looking for prey. Milton passed through the gate and walked towards the centre. A group of youngsters had congregated around one of the park benches. One of their number was showing off on his BMX, bouncing off the front wheel as the others laughed at his skill. Milton assessed them coolly. There were eight of them. Mid-teens, all dressed in the uniform, caps beneath hoodies, baggy jeans, and bright white trainers. He kept walking. As he drew closer, he heard the sound of music being played through the reedy speaker of a mobile phone. It had a fast, thumping beat and aggressive lyrics. The rapper was talking about beefs and pieces and murking anyone who got in his way. One of the group sauntered out from the pack and blocked his path. "What you want, shishi man?" The boy showed no fear. His insolence was practiced and drew hollers of pleasure from the audience. "I'm a journalist," he said. "You BBC? You on the television? Can you get me on the TV?" "No, I'm working on a book." Laughter rang out. "No one reads books, bro." "It's about police corruption. You know anything about that?" Milton watched the boy. He was a child, surely no older than 15. There was a disturbing aspect to his face, a lack of expression, with his eyes constantly flickering to the left and right. Milton had seen that appearance before. Soldiers from war zones looked that way. A pathological watchfulness to ward against the threat of sudden attack. Milton knew enough about psychology to know that kind of perpetual vigilance was unhealthy. He knew soldiers who had been constantly on the alert for danger, who equated any show of emotion with violence, and from whom all feeling had been smelted. They became machines. "The pigs are all bent, man," the boy told him. "You might as well write about the sky being blue or water being wet. You ain't teaching no one nothing round these ends. No one's going to read that." "Do you know Elijah Warriner? What's he got to do with the feds?" "I want to talk to him. I heard he's around here sometimes. Is he a friend of yours?" "That little mong ain't my friend, and there's no point talking to him. He don't know fuck all. You want, though, we could have a conversation, you and me." Milton noticed one of the boys in the group take his phone from his pocket and start to tap out a message. "Fine," he said. "What would you like to talk about?"
"Want to know about violence. I shanked a guy last week. Want to know about that?"
"Not really."
"I could shank you too. I got a knife right here in my pocket."
He sauntered forwards towards Milton, still showing no sign of how outsized he was. He patted the bulge in his hip pocket.
6-inch blade, lighty. I could walk up to you right now like this, take the knife, shank you right in the guts.
He made a fist and jabbed it towards Milton's stomach.
Bang! You'd be done for, blood. Finished. I can make you bleed, big man, right in the middle of the park. Ain't no one gonna come and help you out here, neither. What you think of that?
Milton said nothing.
Man got shook,
one of the others shouted out.
Pinky shook the big man.
Milton looked down at the boy. He was tall and thin and wiry. Couldn't have been more than 9 stone soaking wet. Calling his bluff would provoke the escalation he seemed to want, and there was no point in doing that. He wanted them to think he was a journalist, harmless, a little frightened and out of his depth. The hooting and hollering around them continued, but the atmosphere had become charged.
I might shank you the moment you turn your back.
Milton noticed a group of boys cycling across to them from the edge of the park.
Don't turn your back on me, big man. You don't mean nothing to me. I might do it just for a laugh.
The group on the bikes reached them. There were 6 of them. Milton recognised Elijah at the back. The biggest boy, Milton guessed he was 17 or 18, propped his bike against the bench and strutted over to them. The boy walked across to the group.
All right, Pinky,
he said to the youngster who had threatened him, what's the beef?
Nah, the boy said, ain't no beef.
Milton ignored him and addressed the newcomer. Are you in charge?
You could say that.
Milton pointed over at Elijah. I want to talk to him.
You know this man, Elijah.
A look of suspicion had fallen across his face.
Yeah,
he said warily. He was with my mums.
And do you want to talk to him?
Elijah shook his head.
Sorry, bro. He don't want to talk to you.
He say he a writer,
one of the boys reported, loading the last word with scorn.
That right?
That's right, a journalist.
Bullshit. You ain't a journalist, mate. If you're a journalist, then I'm going to win the fucking X Factor. You must think I was born yesterday. What are you, social?
He's Popo,
one of the other boys cried out. Look at him.
He ain't a fed. Feds don't come into the park unless they've got backup.
The atmosphere was becoming fevered. Milton could see that it had the potential to turn quickly and dangerously. He concentrated on the older boy.
What's your name?
You don't need to know my name.
I don't want any trouble.
Then you don't want to come walking through our ends late at night, do you, bruv? I'm not police. I'm not social. You don't have anything to worry about.
The boy laughed scornfully.
Do I look worried?
No, you don't, Milton said. He raised his voice so that the others could hear him.
Tell Elijah that I want to talk to him. I'm going to have my breakfast in the cafe on Dalston Lane every morning from now on, 9:00. Tell him I'll buy him breakfast too, whatever he wants. And if he doesn't want to meet me, he can call me here instead.
Milton reached into his pocket and took out a card with the number of his mobile printed across it. He gave it to the older boy, staring calmly into his face. A moment of doubt passed across the boy's face, Milton's sudden equanimity shaking his confidence. He took the card between thumb and forefinger.
Thank you, Milton said.
Milton turned his back on the group and set off. He felt vulnerable, but he made a point of not looking back. He felt an itching sensation between his shoulder blades and, as he walked, an empty Coke can bounced off his shoulder and clattered to the pavement. They whooped at their insolent bravado and called out after him. But he didn't respond. He kept walking until he reached the gate next to the Lido. He stopped and looked back. The boys were still gathered in the centre of the park. No one had followed. On his return to the house, he examined one of his own thick hairs, which still lay undisturbed where he had left it earlier in the evening, stuck between the panel and the jamb of the door to the lounge. Next, he went up to his bedroom and examined the dusting of talcum powder he had spread beneath the wardrobe door. It, too, appeared to be untouched. The routine might have appeared pointless, but it had been driven into him by his training and then ingrained by years of experience. It did not make him feel self-conscious or foolish. It came naturally, an easy habit that he had no interest in quashing, however pointless it might have appeared to someone without the particular experience of his strange profession. He was an assassin, and the observance of small rituals like this one had helped to keep him alive. He was satisfied that the house had not been disturbed while he was away, and, allowing himself to relax, he took off his shirt and stood bare-chested at the open window. He snapped open the jaws of his lighter, put flame to a cigarette, and stared into the hot, humid night. The atmosphere was feverish, as taut as a bowstring. He took a deep lungful of smoke and expelled it between his teeth with a faint hiss. He could hear the sound of children on the street, the buzz of televisions, a siren fading in and out of London's constant metropolitan hum. What on earth was he doing here? Milton blew more smoke into the darkness and tossed the spent dog end into the garden below. He undressed and got into bed. The mattress was lumpy and uncomfortable, but he had slept on much worse. He reached one hand up beneath the pillow, his palm resting on the cold steel butt of the Sig Sauer. He calmed his thoughts and went to sleep. Chapter 16. John Milton had a strict morning regime and he saw no reason to vary it. He pulled on a vest and a pair of shorts, slipped his feet into his running shoes and went out for his usual run. It was just after 7, but the sun was already warm. The sky was a perfect blue, deep and dark, and Milton could see that it was going to be another blazing day. His head had been a little foggy, but the exercise quickly woke him. He ran through the estate and into Victoria Park, following the same route that he had taken before. The park was quiet now, and the undercurrent of incipient violence was missing. The baleful groups of boys had been replaced by people walking their dogs and joggers and cyclists passing through the park on their way to work. Milton did 2 laps around the perimeter, settling into his usual loping stride, and by the time he peeled back onto the road and headed back towards the house, he was damp with sweat. He followed a different route back through the estate and came across an old chapel that had evidently found itself an alternative use. A sign above advertised it as Dalston Boxing Club, and posters encouraged local youngsters to join. He ran back to the house, stripped off his sodden clothes, tentatively stepped into the grimy bathtub, and turned the taps until enough warm water dribbled out of the showerhead to make for a serviceable shower. He let the water strike his broad shoulders and run down his back and chest, soothing the aches and pains that were always worse in the morning. He closed his eyes and focused his attention on the tender spots on his body. The dull throb in his clavicle from a bullet's entry wound 5 years ago. The ache in the leg he had broken. The shooting pain in his shoulder from an assassin's knife. He was not as supple as he had once been, he thought ruefully. There were the undeniable signs of growing old. The toll exacted by his profession was visible too, in the latticework of scar tissue that had been carved across his skin. The most recent damage had been caused by a kitchen knife that had scraped its point across his right bicep. It had been wielded by a bomb maker in Helmand, a tailor who assembled suicide vests in a room at the back of his shop. He stood beneath the water and composed his thoughts, spending 10 minutes examining the details of the situation in which he had placed himself. He considered all the various circumstances that he would have to marshal in order to help Sharon and her son. He dressed in casual clothes, left the house, and made his way back to the boxing club. The door was open, and the repeated weighty impacts of someone working on a heavy bag were audible from inside. He went inside. The chapel's pews had been removed, and the interior was dominated by two empty boxing rings that were crammed up against each other, barely fitting in the space. They were old and tatty, the ropes sagging and the canvas torn and stained. Several heavy bags and speed bags had been suspended from the lower ceiling at the edge of the room. A large black man was facing away from him and hadn't noticed his arrival. Milton watched quietly as the man delivered powerful hooks into the sand-filled canvas bag, propelling it left and right and rattling the chain from which it had been hung. The muscles of his shoulders and back bulged from beneath the sweat-drenched fabric of a plain T-shirt, his black skin glistening, contrasting with the icy white cotton. Milton waited for him to pause and took the opportunity to clear his throat.
Rutherford?
He turned, and his face broke into a wide, expressive smile.
Hey, it's the quiet man.
How are you?
Very good. It's John, right?
Yes, that's right. Sorry to disturb you. Could I have a word?
Rutherford nodded. He reached down for a towel and a plastic water bottle and went over to a pew that had been pushed against the wall at the side of the room. He scrubbed his face with the towel and then drank deeply from the bottle.
"This is impressive," Milton said.
"Thanks. It's hard work, but we're doing good. Been here a year this weekend. Don't know how much longer we'll be around, though. Ain't got much more money. The council do us a decent price on the rent, but they're not giving it away. And I can't charge the kids much more than I'm charging at the moment. Something has to happen or we won't be here this time next year."
"Can anyone join?"
"If they're prepared to behave and work hard. You got someone in mind?"
"I might have."
The man took another swig from his bottle.
"Who is it?"
"He's the son of a friend. He's going off the rails a little. He needs some discipline."
"He wouldn't be the first boy like that I've had through those doors. We've got plenty of youngers who used to run in the gangs."
The man spoke simply and inexpressively, but his words were freighted with quiet dignity and an unmistakable authenticity. Milton couldn't help but be impressed by him.
"Which gang is it?"
"I'm not sure. I met some of them in the park last night."
"That'll be the LFB then. London Fields boys."
"What are they like?"
"Been around for a long time. They were running around these ends before I went away, so plenty of years now. I remember we had a beef with them on more than one occasion. Big fight in the park this one time. We uprooted all these fence posts and chased them off. The members change all the time, but they've always had a bad reputation. How deep's your boy involved?"
"Not very, I think. He's young."
"If you've caught him early, we'll have a better chance of straightening him out."
"So you take new members?"
"Always looking for them. Bring your lad along. We'll see what we can do."
"Going to the meeting on Tuesday night?"
"Perhaps,"
he said. "Might see you then."
Milton made his way back to the main road. He went into the cafe and took a seat. "Scrambled eggs with cream, 2 rashers of bacon and a glass of orange juice," he said when the girl came to take his order. He was hungry. He checked his watch. It was a little after 8. The food arrived and he set about it. When he was finished, it was 8:15. He opened the newspaper on the table and read it. It was a short story about the killings in France, but no new details. He skipped ahead, turning the pages and reading until 8:30, and then 9. There was no sign of Elijah. Fair enough, he thought, as he went to settle his bill. He hadn't expected it to be easy. Getting through to the boy was going to take some time. Chapter 17. Little Mark, kids and Elijah had met for lunch at the fast food place nearest to the gates of the school. Elijah had hurried out from double science when he received the text from Pops earlier that morning. He was wearing the white shirt, green blazer and black trousers that made up his uniform, and he felt stupid as he jogged the last few yards down the road to the arcade. Little Mark was wearing his usual low-slung jeans and wind cheater, and Kids was wearing cargo pants and a hoodie.
"You look nice," they laughed at him as he drew alongside.
"No," Elijah said ruefully, "I look stupid."
"You still going to school?"
"Yeah," Elijah said. "So?"
"I say nothing," Kid said, stifling a laugh.
"I don't go all the time," he lied.
"What you doing out here anyway? Thought you'd be in the canteen with all the other little squares."
"Got a text from Pops. He told me to be here."
Other kids from school started to arrive. The canteen was only ever half full. Everyone preferred to come down here for fried chicken and pizza.
"Had an argument with my mum's this morning," Little Mark said.
"Let me guess, you ate everything in the house."
Little Mark grinned.
"Nah, bro, I slept right through my alarm."
"Probably ate that too."
"I'm in bed, right, and it's 8 or something, and my mum's is shouting at me to get up, says I'm going to miss school, and this is the first time I realised, right, she thinks I go to school. I ain't been for 6 months.
Shows how much she pays attention to you, bro. That's child abuse, innit? That's neglect. You ought to give that child line a call."
The happy laughter paused as they heard the rumbling thump, thump, thump of the bass. It was audible long before they even saw the car. But then the black BMW turned the corner, rolled up to the side of the road and parked.
"Shit, bruv," Little Mark said. "You know who that is?"
"What's he doing here?"
Kid said, unable to hide the quiver of nervousness in his voice.
"Who?"
Elijah asked.
"You don't know shit," Kid said sarcastically. "That's business's car. You never seen him before."
Elijah did not answer. He hadn't, but he didn't want to admit that in front of the others. He had the new Brap record, and their poster was on the wall of his bedroom, but that all seemed childish now. The BMW kept its engine running. It was fitted with a powerful sound system, and heavy bass throbbed from the bass bins that had been installed where the boot had been. Elijah looked at the car with wide eyes. He knew it would have cost 50 or 60,000, and that was without the cost of the custom paint job, the wheel trims, the sound system, and all the other accessories. The front door of the BMW opened, and a man slid out from the driver's seat. Elijah recognised him immediately. Risky Business was tall and slender, a good deal over 6 feet, his already impressive height accentuated by an unruly afro that added another 3 or 4 inches. His face was striking rather than handsome. His nose was crooked, his forehead a little too large, his skin marked with acne scars. His eyebrows, straight and manicured, sat above cold and impenetrable black eyes. He was wearing a thin designer wind cheater, black fingerless gloves, and his white Nike high tops were pristine. He wore 2 chunky gold rings on his fingers, diamond earrings through the lobes of both ears, and a heavy gold chain swung low around his neck.
"Aight, youngers," he said.
"Aight, business," Kid said.
"Which one of you is Jar Jar?"
Elijah felt his stomach flip.
"I am."
Business smiled at him, baring 3 gold teeth.
"Don't worry, young guy, I ain't gonna bite. I got something I want you to do for me."
Get in the car, won't take a minute.
Kids and little Mark gawped at that, but Elijah did as he was told. The interior of the car was finished in leather, and the bass was so loud it throbbed through his kidneys. Business got into the car next to him and closed the door. He leant forwards and counterclockwise the volume so he could speak more easily.
One of my boys has clocked you, younger. Says you got a lot of fight in you. That right?
I dunno,
he said, trying to stop his voice from trembling.
He says you do. You hang with Pop's little crew, right?
Yeah,
Elijah said, tripping over the word a little.
Don't be so nervous. There ain't no need to be scared of me.
I ain't scared.
That's good.
Business grinned, gold teeth glinting in his mouth.
Good to see a younger with a bit about himself. Says to me that that younger could make something of himself, get a bit of a reputation. Reminds me what I used to be like when I was green like you, before all this.
He brushed his fingers down his clothes and then extended them to encompass the car.
Get me?
Yes.
So? A friend of a friend says to me he's heard of a younger who's just starting running with Pop's crew, that he's got some backbone. Sound like anyone you know?
I guess.
Business snorted.
You guess?
He looked him up and down.
You're big for your age.
Big enough,
he said defensively.
That's right, bruv. Big enough, I like it. It ain't the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog, that right? You got some balls, younger, I like that.
How old are you? 15.
15, just getting started in the world, getting a name for yourself, getting some respect. That's what you want, right?
Yeah,
he said.
Yeah. You're at what I'd call a crossroads, right? It's like Star Wars. You watched that, right? That last film?
Course,
he replied indignantly.
And it's shit, right, for the most part. Except there's that one bit that makes sense. You know, where Anakin has that choice, where he can either go the good way or the bad way, the light or the dark.
He thinks like he's got a choice, but he ain't got no choice at all, not really. It's an illusion. The dark side has him by the balls and it ain't never gonna let him go. Destiny, all that shit, you know what I mean?
That's where you are, blood. Your teachers, the police, the social, your mums, they'll all say you got a choice. You can choose to try hard at school, get your exams, get a job, except that's all bullshit. Brothers like us, we ain't never gonna get given nothing in this world. Trouble is, a black man loves his new trainers too much, right? And if we wanna get the stuff we like, we gonna have to take it, right?
Yeah,
Elijah laughed nervously. Business was charismatic and funny, but there was a tightness about him that made it impossible to relax. Elijah got the impression that everything would be fine as long as he agreed with him. He was sure that arguing would be a bad idea. So we agree that getting busy on the street is the only way for you to get along in this world.
It ain't easy, though, not on your own. Lots of brothers all got the same idea. You want to be successful. You want the kids you hang around with to take you seriously. You need to build up your rep. I can help you with that.
You start hanging out with me, your little friends will find out you're in my crew. How quickly do you think that's going to happen?
Elijah could hardly keep the smile from his face.
Quick? No, not quick, blood. Instantaneously.
Business clicked his fingers, just like that.
So when I heard there was this new younger on the street already making a name for himself, getting some respect, I say to myself, that's the kind of little brother I used to be like. Maybe there's something I can do to help him get started in life. I'll do it for you. I guarantee it. But first, I need you to prove to me that you're up to it.
I'm up to it, Elijah insisted. What is it? What do I have to do?
Nothing too bad. I just got something I need to take care of for a little while. You reckon that's the sort of thing you could do for me?
Of course, Elijah said. Business took a Tesco carrier bag and dropped it into Elijah's lap. It was heavy, solid. It felt metallic.
Take this home and keep it safe, somewhere your mums won't find it. You got a place like that?
Elijah thought of his comic box.
Yeah, he said.
She don't never come into my room anyway. I can keep it safe.
Nice.
What is it?
Business grinned at him. You know already, right?
No, he said, although he thought that perhaps he did.
There's no point me telling you not to look. I know you will as soon as I'm gone. Go on then. Open it.
Elijah opened the mouth of the bag and took out the newspaper package inside. He unfolded it carefully, gently, as if afraid that a clumsy move might cause an explosion. The gun sat in the middle of the splayed newspaper, nestling amongst the newsprint like a fat, malignant tumour. He tentatively stretched out his fingers and traced them down the barrel, the trigger guard, and then down the butt with its stippled grip. His only knowledge of guns was from his PlayStation, and this looked nothing like the sleek, modern weapons you got to use in Special Ops. This looked older, like it might be some sort of antique, something from that Call of Duty where you were in the war against the Nazis. The barrel was long and thin, with a raised sight at the end. The middle part was round and bulbous, and when Elijah pushed against it, he found that it was hinged and snapped down to reveal six chambers, honeycombed inside. A handful of loose bullets gathered in the creases of the newspaper. What is it? An antique or something?
Don't matter how old it is, bruv. A gun's a gun at the end of the day. You get shot, you're still gonna die. Go on. It's not loaded. Cock it. You know how to do that.
The hammer was stiff, and he had to pull hard with both thumbs to bring it back. He pulled the trigger. The hammer struck down with a solid click, and the barrel rotated. The gun suddenly seemed more than just an abstract idea. It seemed real and dangerous, and Elijah was frightened.
You keep that safe for me, bruv, and be ready. When I call you, you better be there, no hanging around. 30 minutes tops, aight?
All right, he said.
Aight, I was right about you. Someone I can rely on. Yeah, aight. Out you get, younger. I gotta get out of here. Supposed to be seeing my manager, you know what I mean? New record out tomorrow.
He held out his closed fist for Elijah to bump. Elijah did, everything suddenly seeming surreal. He stepped outside, holding the carrier bag tightly. It was heavy, and the solid weight within bumped up against his thigh. The bass in the BMW cranked back up, and the engine revved loudly. Kids and little Mark were sitting on a wall waiting for him. They both wore envious expressions, wide-eyed and open-mouthed.
What did he want? Kid said.
Business sounded the horn twice, let off the handbrake, and fishtailed away from the curb, wheel spinning until the rubber bit on the tarmac.
Just a chat, Elijah said.
What's that?
Little Mark said, pointing at the bag. He clasped the bag tightly.
Nothing.
Chapter 18. Milton was in the cafe again at 9 o'clock. The proprietor recognised him.
Scrambled eggs with cream, 2 rashers of bacon and a glass of orange juice.
Milton nodded with a smile and took the same table as before. He unfolded his copy of the Times and turned the pages as he waited.
he turned the page to an article on a shooting in Brixton. A young boy, reported to be 16 years old, had been shot and killed by another boy. He had passed through the territory of a rival gang to see a girl. The story was backed with a comment, the reporter recounting the deaths in what they were calling the postcode war. 30 young boys, almost all of them black, killed this year, and it was only halfway through August. Most of them shot or stabbed, one bludgeoned to death with a pipe. The proprietor brought over his breakfast.
"Terrible,"
he said, nodding at the open newspaper. He was a Greek, his face grizzled with heavy stubble. He had sad eyes.
"When I was growing up, you had an argument with someone you knew, and the worst thing that had happened is you end up having a punch-up, get a black eye or a bloody nose. These days, with them all tooled up like they are, all those guns and knives, you're lucky if you just end up in hospital. And the only thing most of the victims had done wrong was going out of one area and into another."
"How many of them were from around here?"
"Three. One of them was just down the road. They shot him. Tried to get into the hardware shop, but they finished him off before he could."
"The police?" He laughed bitterly.
"They ain't got a clue half the time."
He sneered at the thought of it.
"Don't get me started on them. Your breakfast will be cold by the time I've finished. You enjoy it, all right. There's more tea if you want it."
Milton saw Elijah Warriner standing in the doorway. He was unmistakably nervous, and Milton thought he might be about to turn and leave. He smiled and waved at the boy, gesturing that he should come inside. Elijah took a look up and down the street and, satisfied, came inside. He was wearing brand new trainers. Despite the heat, he was wearing a bright orange puffer jacket that was obviously expensive. He had a Dallas Cowboy shirt beneath the jacket, and beneath that, Milton could see a thick gold chain. "Sit down," Milton told him, and after another reluctant pause, he did.
"I'm glad you came."
"Yeah?" Elijah grunted.
"What do you fancy?"
The boy said nothing. His eyes darted around the cafe. A diamond stud shone against the dark skin of his ear. The jewellery looked obscene on such a young child. Milton noticed that he had chosen a chair that faced away from the window. He did not want to be seen.
"Breakfast?"
"Ain't hungry."
"Well, I am. I'll get some extra chips in case you change your mind."
Elijah slouched back in the chair, trying hard to appear nonchalant. Milton loaded his fork with eggs and put it into his mouth, watching the boy. He made sure he appeared relaxed and said nothing, leaving it for Elijah to speak first. The boy turned the newspaper around and read the short article on the murdered boy. He finished it and shook his head derisively. "Them boys in Brixton ain't shit. They come up these ends and we'd send them back to their mamas."
"What's your gang?"
"LFB.
Elijah replied proudly.
"London Fields boys, right?
I've seen the graffiti on the walls."
"Yeah, all round here. This is our ends."
"Don't think I've seen you in the papers."
We have been."
"Perhaps you're not bad enough."
"What you mean?"
"You need a reputation, don't you?"
"We're plenty bad enough."
"But it looks like you have to kill someone to get into the papers."
"You don't think we've marked anyone?"
"I don't know."
"Some of the boys you've been hanging out with, maybe they have. But I know you haven't."
"Fuck you know."
Milton put his knife and fork down and carefully wiped his mouth. He pressed his finger against the photograph of the dead boy.
"Do you really think you could do that?
You think you could go up to another boy, take out a gun, and pull the trigger?"
Elijah tried to hold his gaze, but could not. He looked down at the table. Milton shook his head.
"You don't have it in you.
You don't
have it in you for your own conscience to haunt you for the rest of your whole life, telling you you've robbed a wife of her husband, children of their father, brothers, friends, everyone. Look at me. I know if a man has it in him. Do you have it in you? Elijah stood up. I didn't come here to get lectured. I'm trying to put things into perspective. Don't need that, he said, making a dismissive gesture with the back of his hand. It's not a bad thing. Why would anyone choose to be like that? You ain't got any idea what you're on about. Sit down, Elijah. His words had no effect. Sit down, Elijah. Who do you think you are? You don't know shit about me. You don't know shit about anything, about these ends, what it's like to be here, what we do. You obviously think you do, but you don't. I'm sorry. Sit down. Let's talk. He was angry now, and Milton could see he wouldn't be able to calm him down. I don't know what I was thinking coming here to see you. You can't help me. You've got no idea. I must have been out of my mind. He turned and left, the door clattering behind him. Milton rose and followed him into the street. Elijah was heading back towards the estate, his hood pulled up and his shoulders hunched forwards. Milton was about to set off after him before he thought better of it. He went back inside and sat down again before what was left of his breakfast. He cursed himself. What had he been thinking? He had let his temper get the better of him, and now he had lost his opportunity to get through to the boy. He was stubborn and headstrong, and the direct approach was not going to be successful. He would have to try another way.